I-14, Taravangian. Taravangian, king of Carbranth, awoke to stiff muscles and an ache in his back. He didn't feel stupid. That was a good sign. He sat up with a groan. Those aches were perpetual now, and his best healers could only shake their heads and promise him that he was fit for his age. Fit. His joints cracked like logs on the fire, and he couldn't stand quickly, lest he lose his balance and topple to the floor. To age truly was to suffer the ultimate treason, that of one's body against oneself. He sat up in his cot. Water lapped quietly against the hull of his cabin, and the air smelled of salt. He heard shouts in the near distance, however. The ship had arrived on schedule. Excellent. As he settled himself, one servant approached with a table and another with a warm, wet cloth for wiping his eyes and hands. Behind them waited the king's testers. How long had it been since Taravangian had been alone, truly alone? Not since before the aches had come upon him. Mabin knocked on the open door, bearing his morning meal on a tray, stewed and spiced grain mush. It was supposed to be good for his constitution. Tasted like dishwater. Bland dishwater. Mabin stepped forward to set out the meal, but Maral, a Thalen man in a black leather cuirass, who wore both his head and eyebrows shaved, stopped her with a hand to the arm. "Tests first," Maral said. Taravangian looked up, meeting the large man's gaze. Maral could loom over a mountain and intimidate the wind itself. Everyone assumed he was Taravangian's head bodyguard. The truth was more disturbing. Maral was the one who got to decide whether Taravangian would spend the day as king or as a prisoner.
"Surely you can let him eat first," Mabin said.
"This is an important day," Maral said, voice low. "I would know the result of the testing."
"But—"
"It is his right to demand this, Mabin," Taravangian said. "Let us be on with it."
Maral stepped back, and the testers approached. A group of three storm wardens in deliberately esoteric robes and caps. They presented a series of pages covered in figures and glyphs. They were today's variation on a sequence of increasingly challenging mathematical problems devised by Taravangian himself on one of his better days. He picked up his pen with hesitant fingers. He did not feel stupid, but he rarely did. Only on the worst of days did he immediately recognize the difference. On those days his mind was thick as tar, and he felt like a prisoner in his own mind, aware that something was profoundly wrong. Today wasn't one of those, fortunately. He wasn't a complete idiot. At worst, he'd just be very stupid. He set to his task, solving what mathematical problems he could. It took the better part of an hour, but during the process he was able to gauge his capacity. As he had suspected, he was not terribly smart, but he was not stupid either. Today, he was average. That would do. He turned over the problems to the storm wardens, who consulted in low voices. They turned to Maral.
"He is fit to serve," one proclaimed. "He may not offer binding commentary on the diagram, but he may interact outside of supervision. He may change government policy so long as there is a 3-day delay before the changes take effect, and he may also freely pass judgment in trials."
Maral nodded, looking to Taravangian.
"Do you accept this assessment and these restrictions, Your Majesty?"
"I do."
Maral nodded, then stepped back, allowing Mabin to set out Taravangian's morning meal. The trio of storm wardens tucked away the papers he'd filled out. Then they retreated to their own cabins. The testing was an extravagant procedure and consumed valuable time each morning. Still, it was the best way he had found to deal with his condition. Life could be tricky for a man who awoke each morning with a different level of intelligence.
particularly when the entire world might depend upon his genius or might come crashing down upon his idiocy.
How is it out there?
Taravangian asked softly, picking at his meal, which had gone cold during the testing.
Horrible, Morale said with a grin. Just as we wanted it.
Do not take pleasure in suffering, Taravangian replied, even when it is a work of our hands.
He took a bite of the mush.
Particularly when it is a work of our hands.
As you wish. I will do so no more.
Can you really change that easily? Taravangian asked. Turn off your emotions on a whim?
Of course, Moral said. Something about that tickled that Taravangian, some thread of interest. If he had been in one of his more brilliant states, he might have seized upon it. But today, he sensed thought seeping away like water between fingers. Once he had fretted about these missed opportunities, but he had eventually made his peace. Days of brilliance, he had come to learn, brought their own problems.
Let me see the diagram, he said,
anything to distract from this slop they insisted on feeding him. Morrell stepped aside, allowing Adratagia, head of Taravangian's scholars, to approach, bearing a thick, leather-bound volume. She set it onto the table before Taravangian, then bowed. Taravangian rested his fingers upon the leather-bound cover, feeling a moment of reverence? Was that right? Did he revere anything anymore? God was dead, after all, and Boronism therefore a sham. This book, though, was holy. He opened it to one of the pages marked with a reed. Inside were scribbles. Frenetic, bombastic, majestic scribbles that had been painstakingly copied from the walls of his former bedroom. Sketches laid atop one another, lists of numbers that seemed to make no sense. Lines upon lines upon lines of script written in a cramped hand. Madness. And genius. Here and there, Taravangian could find hints that this writing was his own. The way he wiggled a line, the way he wrote along the edge of a wall, much like how he would write along the side of a page when he was running out of room. He didn't remember any of this. It was the product of 20 hours of lucid insanity, the most brilliant he had ever been.
"Does it strike you as odd, Adro?" Taravangian asked the scholar. "That genius and idiocy are so similar."
"Similar?" Adratagia asked. "Vargo, I do not see them as similar at all."
He and Adratagia had grown up together, and she still used Taravangian's boyhood nickname. He liked that. It reminded him of days before all of this.
On both my most stupid days and my most incredible, Taravangian said, I am unable to interact with those around me in a meaningful way. It is like I become a gear that cannot fit those turning beside it. Too small or too large, it does not matter. The clock will not work.
I had not considered that, Adratagia said.
When Taravangian was at his stupidest, he was not allowed from his room. Those were the days he spent drooling in a corner. When he was merely dull-minded, he was allowed out under supervision. He spent those nights crying for what he had done, knowing that the atrocities he committed were important, but not understanding why. When he was dull, he could not change policy. Interestingly, he had decided that when he was too brilliant, he was also not allowed to change policy. He'd made this decision after a day of genius where he'd thought to fix all of Carbranth's problems with a series of very rational edicts, such as requiring people to take an intelligence test of his own devising before being allowed to breed. So brilliant, on one hand, so stupid, on another.
Is that your joke here, Night Watcher? He wondered. Is that the lesson I'm to learn? Do you even care about lessons, or is what you do to us merely for your own amusement?
He turned his attention back to the book, the diagram, that grand plan he had devised on his singular day of unparalleled brilliance. Then, too, he'd spent the day staring at a wall. He'd written on it, babbling the whole time, making connections no man had ever made before. He had scribbled all over his walls, floor, even parts of the ceiling he could reach. Most of it had been written in an alien script, a language he himself had devised, for the scripts he had known had been unable to convey ideas precisely enough. Fortunately, he'd thought to carve a key on the top of his bedside table, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to make sense of his masterpiece. They could barely make sense of it anyway. He flipped through several pages, copied exactly from his room. Adratagia and her scholars had made notations here and there, offering theories on what various drawings and lists might mean. They wrote those in the women's script, which Taravangian had learned years ago. Adratagia's notes on one page indicated that a picture there appeared to be a sketch of the mosaic on the floor of the Vaden Palace. He paused on that page. It might have relevance to this day's activities. Unfortunately, he wasn't smart enough today to make much sense of the book or its secrets. He had to trust that his smarter self was correct in his interpretations of his even smarter self's genius. He shut the book and put down his spoon.
"Let us be on with it."
He stood up and left the cabin, Maral on one side of him and Adratagia on the other. He emerged into sunlight and to the sight of a smoldering coastal city, complete with enormous terraced formations, like plates or sections of shale bark, the remnants of city covering them and practically spilling over the sides. Once this sight had been wondrous. Now it was black. The buildings, even the palace, destroyed. Badenar, one of the great cities of the world, was now little more than a heap of rubble and ash. Taravangian idled by the rail. When his ship had sailed into the harbor the night before, the city had been dotted with the red glow of burning buildings. Those had seemed alive. More alive than this. The wind was blowing in off the ocean, pushing at him from behind. It swept the smoke inland, away from the ship, so that Taravangian could barely smell it. An entire city burned just beyond his fingertips, and yet the stench vanished into the wind. The weeping would come soon. Perhaps it would wash away some of this destruction.
"Come, Varco," Adratagia said. "They are waiting."
He nodded, joining her in climbing into the rowboat for tendering to shore. There had once been grand docks for this city. No more. One faction had destroyed them in an attempt to keep out the others.
"It's amazing," Maral said, settling down into the tender beside him.
"I thought you said you weren't going to be pleased any longer,"
Taravangian said, stomach turning as he saw one of the heaps at the edge of the city. Bodies.
"I am not pleased," Maral said, "but Inor, do you realize that the 80s war between Imul and Tukar has lasted 6 years, and doesn't produce nearly this level of desolation? Yakaved ate itself in a matter of months."
"Soulcasters," Adratagia whispered.
It was more than that. Even in his painfully normal state, Taravangian could see it was so. Yes, with soulcasters to provide food and water, armies could march at speed, no carts or supply lines to slow them, and commence a slaughter in almost no time at all. But Imul and Tukar had their share of soulcasters as well. Sailors started rowing them toward shore.
"There was more," Maral said. "Each high prince sought to seize the capital. That made them converge. It was almost like the wars of some northern savages, with a time and place appointed for the shaking of spears and chanting of threats. Only here, it depopulated a kingdom."
"Let us hope, Maral, that you make an overstatement,"
Taravangian said.
We will need this kingdom's people.
He turned away, stifling a moment of emotion as he saw bodies upon the rocks of the shore, men who had died by being shoved over the side of a nearby cliff into the ocean.
That ridge normally sheltered the dock from high storms.
In war, it had been used to kill, one army pressing the other back off the drop.
Adrotagia saw his tears, and though she said nothing, she pursed her lips in disapproval. She did not like how emotional he became when he was low of intellect.
And yet he knew for a fact that the old woman still burned a glyph ward each morning as a prayer for her deceased husband. A strangely devout action for blasphemers such as they.
What is the day's news from home?
Taravangian asked, to draw attention from the tears he wiped away.
Dova reports that the number of death rattles we're finding has dropped even further. She didn't find a single one yesterday, and only two the day before.
Moelach moves, then, Taravangian said. It is certain now. The creature must have been drawn by something westward.
What now? Did Taravangian suspend the murders? His heart yearned to. But if they could discover even one more glimmer about the future, one fact that could save hundreds of thousands, would it not be worth the lives of the few now?
Tell Dova to continue the work, he said.
He had not anticipated that covenant would attract the loyalty of an Ardent of all things. The diagram and its members knew no boundaries. Dova had discovered their work on her own, and they'd needed to either induct her or assassinate her.
It will be done, Adrotagia said.
The boatman moved them up alongside some smoother rocks at the harbor's edge, then hopped out into the water. The men were servants of his and were part of the diagram. He trusted them, for he needed to trust some people.
Have you researched that other matter I requested? Taravangian asked. It is a difficult matter to answer, Adrotagia said. The exact intelligence of a man is impossible to measure. Even your tests only give us an approximation. The speed at which you answer questions and the way you answer them, well, it lets us make a judgment. But it is a crude one.
The boatman hauled them up onto the stony beach with ropes. Wood scraped stone with an awful sound. At least it covered up the moans in the near distance. Adrotagia took a sheet from her pocket and unfolded it. Upon it was a graph, with dots plotted in a kind of hump shape, a small trail to the left rising to a mountain in the center, then falling off in a similar curve to the right.
I took your last 500 days' test results and assigned each one a number between 0 and 10, Adrotagia said. A representation of how intelligent you were that day, though, as I said, it is not exact.
The hump near the middle? Taravangian asked, pointing.
When you were average intelligence, Adrotagia said. You spend most of your time near there, as you can see. Days of pure intelligence and days of ultimate stupidity are both rare. I had to extrapolate from what we had, but I think this graph is somewhat accurate.
Taravangian nodded, then allowed one of the boatmen to help him debark. He had known that he spent more days average than he did otherwise. What he had asked her to figure out, however, was when he could expect another day like the one during which he'd created the diagram. It had been years now since that day of transcendent mastery. She climbed out of the boat, and Moral followed. She stepped up to him with her sheet.
So this is where I was most intelligent, Taravangian said, pointing at the last point on the chart.
It was far to the right and very close to the bottom, a representation of high intelligence and a low frequency of occurrence.
This was that day of perfection.
No, Adrotagia said.
What?
That was the time you were the most intelligent during the last 500 days,
Adratagia explained.
This point represents the day you finished the most complex problems you'd left for yourself, and the day you devised new ones for use in future tests.
I remember that day, he said. It was when I solved Fabrison's conundrum.
Yes, she said. The world may thank you for that someday, if it survives.
I was smart on that day, he said.
Smart enough that Morale had declared he needed to be locked in the palace, lest he reveal his nature.
He'd been convinced that if he could just explain his condition to the city, they would all listen to reason and let him control their lives perfectly.
He'd drafted a law requiring that all people of less than average intellect be required to commit suicide for the good of the city. It had seemed reasonable. He had considered they might resist, but thought that the brilliance of the argument would sway them. Yes, he had been smart on that day, but not nearly as smart as the day of the diagram. He frowned, inspecting the paper.
This is why I can't answer your question, Vargo,
Adratagia said.
That graph, it's what we call a logarithmic scale. Each step from that center point is not equal. They compound on one another the farther out you get. How smart were you on the day of the diagram? 10 times smarter than your smartest otherwise?
100, Taravangian said, looking at the graph. Maybe more. Let me do the calculations.
Aren't you stupid today?
Not stupid, average. I can figure this much. Each step to the side is
a measurable change in intelligence, she said. You might say that each step sideways is a doubling of your intelligence, though that is hard to quantify. The steps upward are easier. They measure how frequently you have days of the given intelligence. So if you start at the center of the peak, you can see that for every 5 days you spend being average, you spend 1 day being mildly stupid, and 1 day mildly smart. For every 5 of those, you spend 1 day moderately stupid, and 1 day moderately genius. For every 5 days like that...
Taravangian stood on the rocks, his soldiers waiting above as he counted on the graph.
He moved sideways off the graph until he reached the point where he guessed the day of the diagram might have been.
Even that seemed conservative to him.
Almighty above, he whispered.
Thousands of days. Thousands upon thousands.
It should never have happened.
Of course it should have, she said.
But it's so unlikely as to be impossible.
It's perfectly possible, she said. The likelihood of it having happened is 1, as it already occurred. That is the oddity of outliers and probability, Taravangian. A day like that could happen again tomorrow. Nothing forbids it. It's all pure chance, so far as I can determine. But if you want to know the likelihood of it happening again...
He nodded.
If you were to live another 2,000 years, Vargo, she said... You'd maybe have 1 single day like this among them. Maybe. Even odds, I'd say.
Morale snorted.
So it was luck?
No, it was simple probability.
Either way, Taravangian said, folding the paper, this was not the answer I wanted.
Since when has it mattered what we want?
Never, he said. And it never will.
He tucked the sheet into his pocket.
They picked their way up the rocks, passing corpses bloated from too long in the sun, and joined a small group of soldiers at the top of the beach. They wore the burnt orange crest of Carbranth. He had few soldiers to his name. The diagram called for his nation to be unthreatening.
The diagram was not perfect, however. They caught errors in it now and then.
or not truly errors, just missed guesses.
Taravangian had been supremely brilliant that day, but he had not been able to see the future. He had made educated guesses, very educated, and had been right an eerie amount of the time. But the farther they went from that day, and the knowledge he'd had then, the more the diagram needed tending and cultivation to stay on course. That was why he'd hoped for another such day soon, a day to revamp the diagram. That would not come, most likely. They would have to continue, trusting in that man that he had once been, trusting in his vision and understanding. Better that than anything else in the world. Gods and religion had failed them. Kings and high lords were selfish, petty things. If he was going to trust one thing to believe in, it would be himself and the raw genius of a human mind unfettered. It was difficult at times, though, to stay the course, particularly when he faced the consequences of his actions. They entered the battlefield. Most of the fighting had apparently moved outside of the city once the fire began. The men had continued warring even as their capital burned. 7 factions. The diagram had guessed 6. Would that matter? A soldier handed him a scented handkerchief to hold over his face as they passed the dead and dying. Blood and smoke. Scents he would come to know all too well before this was through. Men and women in the burnt orange livery of Carbranth picked through the dead and wounded. Throughout the east, the color had become synonymous with healing. Indeed, tents flying his banner, the banner of the surgeon, dotted the battlefield. Taravangian's healers had arrived just before the battle, and had started ministering to the wounded immediately. As he left the fields of the dead, Vaden soldiers began to stand up from where they sat in a dull-eyed stupor at the edges of the battlefield. Then they started to cheer him.
"Pali's mind," Adratagia said, watching them rise. "I don't believe it."
The soldiers sat separated in groups by banner, being tended to by Taravangian's surgeons, water-bearers, and comforters. Wounded and unwounded alike, any who could stand rose for the King of Carbranth and cheered him.
"The diagram said it would happen," Taravangian said.
"I thought for certain that was an error," she replied, shaking her head.
"They know," Moral said. "We are the only victors this day. Our healers, who earn the respect of all sides. Our comforters, who help the dying pass. Their high lords brought them only misery. You brought them life and hope."
"I brought them death," Taravangian whispered.
He had ordered the execution of their king, along with specific high princes the diagram indicated. In doing so, he had pushed the various factions into war with one another. He had brought this kingdom to its knees. Now they cheered him for it. He forced himself to stop with one of the groups, asking after their health, seeing if there was anything he could do for them. It was important to be seen by the people as a compassionate man. The diagram explained this in casual sterility, as if compassion were something one could measure in a cup next to a pint of blood. He visited another group of soldiers, then a third. Many stepped up to him, touching his arms or his robe, weeping tears of thanks and joy. Many more of the Vaden soldiers remained sitting in the tents, however, staring out over the fields of dead, numb of mind.
"The thrill," he whispered to Adratagia as they left the latest group of men. "They fought through the night as their capital burned. It must have been in force."
"I agree," she said. "It gives us a further reference point. The thrill is at least as strong here as it is in Alethkar, maybe stronger. I will speak to our scholars. Perhaps this will help pinpoint Nergeul."
"Do not spend too much effort on that," Taravangian said, approaching another group of Vaden soldiers. "I'm not sure what we would even do if we found the thing."
An ancient evil spren was not something he had the resources to tackle. Not yet, at least.
I would rather know where Moelach is moving.
Hopefully Moelach hadn't decided to slumber again. The death rattles had, so far, offered them the best way that they'd found to augment the diagram. There was one answer, however, he'd never been able to determine. One he'd give almost anything to know. Would all of this be enough?
He met with the soldiers and adopted the air of a kindly, if not bright, old man. Caring and helpful. He was almost that man in truth today. He tried to do an imitation of himself when he was a little dumber. People accepted that man, and when he was of that intellect, he did not need to feign compassion nearly as much as he did when smarter. Blessed with intelligence, cursed with compassion to feel pain for what he had done. They came inversely. Why couldn't he have both at once? He did not think that in other people intelligence and compassion were tied in such a way. The Night Watcher's motives behind her boons and curses were unfathomable. Taravangian moved through the crowd of men, listening to them beg for more relief and for drugs to ease their pain. Listening to their thanks. These soldiers had suffered a fight that, even yet, seemed to have no victor. They wanted something to hold to, and Taravangian was neutral, supposedly. It was shocking how easily they bared their souls to him. He came to the next soldier in line, a cloaked man clutching an apparently broken arm. Taravangian looked into the man's hooded eyes. It was Zeth's son, Bellano. Taravangian felt a moment of sheer panic. "We need to speak," the Shin man said. Taravangian grabbed the assassin by the arm, hauling him away from the crowd of Vaden soldiers. With his other hand, Taravangian felt in his pocket for the oath stone he carried on his person at all times. He pulled it out just to see. Yes, it was no fake. Damnation, seeing Zeth there had made him think that he'd been bested somehow. The stone stolen and Zeth sent to kill him. Zeth let himself be pulled away. What had he said?
That he needed to talk, you fool, Taravangian thought to himself. If he'd come to kill you, you would be dead.
Had Zeth been seen here? What would people say if they saw Taravangian interacting with the bald Shin man? Rumors had started from less. If anyone got even a hint that Taravangian had been involved with the infamous assassin in white. Maral noticed immediately that something was wrong. He barked orders to the guards, separating Taravangian from the Vaden soldiers. Adrotagia, who had been sitting with crossed arms nearby, watching and tapping her foot, leaped to stride over. She peeked at the person under the hood, then gasped, the color draining from her face.
"How dare you come here," Taravangian said to Zeth, speaking under his breath while maintaining a cheerful pose and expression.
He was of only average intelligence today, but he was still a king, raised and trained to the court. He could maintain his composure.
"A problem has arisen," Zeth said, face hooded, voice emotionless.
Speaking to this creature was like speaking to one of the dead themselves.
"Why have you failed to kill Dalinar Kholin?" Adrotagia demanded with quiet urgency. "We know you fled. Return and do the job."
Zeth glanced at her, but did not reply. She did not hold his oath stone. He did seem to note her, however, with those two blank eyes of his.
Damnation.
Their plan had been to keep Zeth from meeting or knowing of Adrotagia, just in case he decided to turn against Taravangian and kill him. The diagram hypothesized this possibility.
"Kholin has a surge binder," Zeth said.
So, Zeth knew about Yasna. Had she faked her death, then, as he'd suspected?
Damnation.
The battlefield seemed to grow still. To Taravangian, the moans of the wounded faded away. Everything narrowed to just him and Zeth. Those eyes, the tone of the man's voice. A dangerous tone. What?
"He spoke with emotion," Taravangian realized. "That last sentence was said with passion."
It sounded like a plea,
as if Zeth's voice were being squeezed on the sides. This man was not sane. Zeth's son Valana was the most dangerous weapon on all of Roshar, and he was broken. Storms, why couldn't this have happened on a day when Terravangian had more than half a wit?
"What makes you say this?" Terravangian said, trying to buy time for his mind to lumber through the implications.
He held Zeth's oathstone before him, almost as if it could chase away problems like a superstitious woman's glyph ward.
"I fought him," Zeth said. "He protected Colin."
"Ah, yes," Terravangian said, thinking furiously. Zeth had been banished from Shinovar, made truthless for something relating to a claim that the Voidbringers had returned. If he discovered that he wasn't wrong about that claim, then what?
"Him? You fought a Surgebinder?" Adratagia said, glancing at Terravangian. "Yes," Zeth said. "An Alethi man who fed upon Stormlight. He healed a blade-severed arm. He is radiant."
That strain in his voice did not sound safe. Terravangian glanced at Zeth's hands. They were clenching into fists time and time again, like hearts beating.
"No, no," Terravangian said. "I have learned this only recently. Yes, it makes sense now. One of the honor blades has vanished."
Zeth blinked and he focused on Terravangian, as if returning from a distant place.
"One of the other seven?"
"Yes," Terravangian said. "I have heard only hints. Your people are secretive, but yes, I see it is one of the two that allows regrowth. Colin must have it."
Zeth swayed back and forth, though he did not seem conscious of the motion. Even now he moved with a fighter's grace.
"Storms." "This man I fought," Zeth said. "He summoned no blade."
"But he used Stormlight," Terravangian said.
"Yes."
"So he must have an honor blade."
It is the only explanation."
Seth's voice grew colder.
"Yes, the only explanation. I will kill him and retrieve it."
"No," Terravangian said firmly. "You are to return to Dalinar Kholin and do the task assigned you. Do not fight this other man. Attack when he is not present."
"But have I your oathstone?"
Terravangian demanded.
"Is my word to be questioned?"
Zeth stopped swaying, his gaze locked with Terravangian's.
"I am truthless. I do as my master requires, and I do not ask for an explanation."
"Stay away from the man with the honor blade," Terravangian repeated. "Kill Dalinar."
"It will be done."
Zeth turned and strode away. Terravangian wanted to yell further instructions.
"Don't be seen. Don't ever come to me in public again."
Instead, he sat right there in the path, composure crumbling. He gasped, trembling, sweat streaming from his brow.
"Stormfather," Adratagia said, settling on the ground beside him. "I thought we were dead."
Servants brought Terravangian a chair, while Maral made excuses for him. "The king is overcome with grief at the deaths of so many. He is old, you know, and so caring." Terravangian breathed in and out, struggling to regain control. He looked to Adratagia, who sat in the middle of a circle of servants and soldiers, all sworn to the diagram.
"Who is it?" he asked softly. "Who is this Surgebinder?"
"Yasna's ward,"
Adratagia said. They had been startled when that one arrived on the shattered plains. Already they hypothesized that the girl had been trained, if not by Yasna, then by the girl's brother before his death.
"No," Terravangian said. "A male. One of Dalinar's family members,"
he thought for a time.
"We need the diagram itself."
She went to fetch it from the ship. Nothing else, his visits to the soldiers, more important meetings with Vaden leaders, mattered right now. The diagram was off. They strayed into dangerous territory. She returned with it, and with the storm wardens, who set up a tent around Taravangian right there on the path. Excuses continued. The king is weak from the sun. He must rest and burn glyph wards to the Almighty for the preservation of your nation. Taravangian cares while your own light eyes sent you to the slaughter. By the light of the spheres, Taravangian picked through the tome, poring over translations of his own words written in a language he had invented and then forgotten. Answers. He needed answers.
"Did ever I tell you, Adro, what I asked for?" he whispered as he read. "Yes."
He was barely listening.
"Capacity," he whispered, turning a page. "Capacity to stop what was coming. The capacity to save humankind."
He searched. He was not brilliant today, but he had spent many days reading these pages, going over and over and over passages. He knew them. The answers would be here. They would. Taravangian worshipped only one god now. It was the man he had been on that day.
There.
He found it on a reproduction of one corner of his room where he'd written in tiny script sentences over the top of one another because he'd run out of space. In his clarity of genius, the sentences had looked easy to separate, but it had taken his scholars years to piece together what this said.
"They will come. You cannot stop their oaths. Look for those who survive when they should not. That pattern will be your clue."
"A bridgeman," Taravangian whispered.
"What?"
Adratagia asked. Taravangian looked up, blinking bleary eyes.
"Dalinar's bridgemen, the ones he took from Satius. Did you read the account of their survival?"
"I didn't think it important. Just another game of power between Satius and Dalinar."
"No, it's more."
"They had survived." Taravangian stood up.
"Wake every Alethi sleeper we have. Send every agent in the area. There will be stories told of one of these bridgemen. Miraculous survival. Favored of the winds. One is among them. He might not know yet exactly what he's doing, but he has bonded a spren and sworn at least the first ideal."
"If we find him?" Adratagia asked.
"We keep him away from Zeth at all costs."
Taravangian handed her the diagram.
"Our lives depend upon it. Zeth is a beast who gnaws at his leg to escape his bonds. If he gets free..."
She nodded, moving off to do as he commanded. She hesitated at the flaps to their temporary tent.
"We might have to reassess our methods of determining your intelligence. What I have seen in the last hour makes me question whether average can be applied to you today."
"The assessments are not inaccurate," he said. "You simply underestimate the average man."
Besides, in dealing with the diagram, he might not remember what he had written or why, but there were echoes sometimes. She laughed, making way as Moral stepped in.
"Your Majesty," he said, "time runs short. The High Prince is dying."
"He's been dying for years."
Still, Taravangian did hasten his step, as much as he was capable of doing these days, as he resumed his hike. He didn't stop with any more of the soldiers and gave only brief waves toward the cheers he received. Eventually, Moral led him over a hillside away from the immediate stench of the battle and the smoldering city. A series of storm wagons here flew an optimistic flag, that of the King of Yakaved. The guards there let Taravangian enter their ring of wagons, and he approached the largest one, an enormous vehicle, almost like a mobile building on wheels. They found High Prince Valam, King Valam, in bed coughing. His hair had fallen out since Taravangian had last seen him, and his cheeks were so sunken that rainwater would have pooled in them.
Reddin, the king's bastard son, stood at the foot of the bed, head bowed. With the three guards who stood in the room, there wasn't room for Taravangian, so he stopped in the doorway.
"Taravangian,"
Balaam said, then coughed into his handkerchief. The cloth came back bloodied.
"You've come for my kingdom, have you?"
"I don't know what you mean, Your Majesty,"
Taravangian said.
"Don't play coy,"
Balaam snapped.
"I can't stand it in women or in rivals. Stormfather, I don't know what they're going to make of you. I half think they'll have you assassinated by the end of the week."
He waved with a sickly hand, all draped in cloth, and the guards made way for Taravangian to enter the small bedchamber.
"Clever ploy," the king said, "sending that food, those healers. The soldiers love you, I've heard. What would you have done if one side had won decisively?"
"I'd have had a new ally," Taravangian said, "grateful for my aid."
"You helped all sides."
"But the winner the most, Your Majesty," Taravangian said. "We can minister to survivors, but not the dead."
Balaam coughed again, a great hacking mess. His bastard stepped up, concerned, but the king waved him back.
"Would have figured,"
the king said to him between wheezes.
"You'd be the only one of my children to live, bastard."
He turned to Taravangian.
"Turns out you have a legitimate claim on the throne, Taravangian. Through your mother's side, I think. A marriage to a Vaden princess some 3 generations back."
"I am not aware," Taravangian said.
"Didn't you hear me about being coy?"
"We both have a role to play in this production, Your Majesty," Taravangian said. "I am merely speaking the lines as they were written."
"You talk like a woman,"
Balaam said. He spat blood to the side.
"I know what you're up to. In a week or so after caring for my people, your scribes will discover your claim on the throne. You reluctantly step in to save the kingdom, as urged by my own storming people."
"I see you've had the script read to you," Taravangian said softly.
"That assassin will come for you."
"He very well might."
That was the truth.
"Don't know why I even storming tried for this throne,"
Balaam said.
"At least I'll die as a king."
He heaved a deep breath, then raised his hand, gesturing impatiently at the scribes huddled outside the room. The women perked up, peeking around Taravangian.
"I'm making this idiot my heir,"
Balaam said, waving at Taravangian.
"Ha! Let the other high princes chew on that."
"They are dead, Your Majesty," Taravangian said.
"What? All of them?"
"Yes."
"Even Boryar?"
"Yes."
"Huh,"
Balaam said.
"Bastard."
At first, Taravangian thought that was a reference to one of the deceased. Then, however, he noticed the king waving at his illegitimate son. Reddin stepped up, going onto one knee beside the bed as Taravangian made room. Balaam struggled with something beneath his blankets, his side knife. Reddin helped him get it out, then held the knife awkwardly. Taravangian inspected this Reddin, curious. This was the king's ruthless executioner that he had read about? This concerned, helpless-looking man?
"Through my heart,"
Balaam said.
"Father, no,"
Reddin said.
"Through my storming heart,"
Balaam shouted, spraying bloody spittle across his sheet.
"I won't lie here and let Taravangian coax my own servants into poisoning me. Do it, boy. Or can't you do a single thing that—"
Reddin slammed the knife down into his father's chest with such force it made Taravangian jump. Reddin then stood, saluted, and shoved his way out of the room. The king heaved a final gasp, eyes glazing over.
so the night will reign, for the choice of honor is life.
Taravangian raised an eyebrow. A death rattle? Here? Now? Blast. And he wasn't in a position where he could write down the exact phrasing. He'd have to remember it. Balaam's life faded away until he was simply meat. A shard blade appeared from vapor beside the bed, then thumped to the wooden floor of the wagon. Nobody reached for it, and the soldiers in the room and scribes outside it looked to Taravangian, then knelt.
"Cruel, what Balaam did to that one," Maral said, nodding toward the bastard who shoved his way out of the storm wagon and into the light.
"More than you know," Taravangian said, reaching out to touch the knife protruding through blanket and clothing from the old king's chest.
He hesitated, fingers inches from the blade.
"The bastard will be known as a patricide on the official records. If he had interest in the throne, this will make it difficult for him, even more so than his parentage."
Taravangian pulled his fingers away from the knife.
"Might I have a moment with the fallen king? I would speak a prayer for him."
The others left him, even Maral. They shut the small door, and Taravangian sat down on the stool beside the corpse. He had no intention of saying any sort of prayer, but he did want a moment, alone, to think. It had worked. Just as the diagram instructed, Taravangian was king of Yakaved. He had taken the first major step toward unifying the world, as Gavilar had insisted would need to happen if they were to survive. That was, at least, what the visions had proclaimed. Visions Gavilar had confided in him 6 years ago, the night of the Alethi king's death. Gavilar had seen visions of the Almighty, who was also now dead, and of a coming storm.
"Unite them. I am doing my best, Gavilar," Taravangian whispered. "I am sorry that I need to kill your brother."
That would not be the only sin upon his head when this was done, not by a faint breeze or a storm wind. He wished once again that this day had been a day of brilliance. Then he wouldn't have felt so guilty.